The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
What more can I do, dear lady?
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 What more can I do, dear lady? What a great question for anybody to ask. Sister Adele courageously asked Our Lady this question, and responding with courage and zeal, she has changed the world and the church forever.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So good to hear the voice of Bishop David Ricken from the Diocese of Green Bay, Wisconsin. That was from a couple of days ago. Again, shows you the scope of topics here on the Drew Mariani Show and how you and I talk about our faith every afternoon here on Relevant Radio. It's John Harper in for Drew. Drew is on pilgrimage with a number of Relevant Radio listeners over in the Holy Land. We hope to connect with him and the pilgrims at some point during the week. Looking forward to that. And we're also looking forward to perhaps hosting you on a future pilgrimage. And we'll have much more information about that. Keep listening here to Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Well, it's 4 weeks from tomorrow, and you simply can't escape it, even if you don't watch a lot of television. We're talking about the hotly contested midterm elections just 4 weeks from tomorrow. And I suppose one of the questions that you can ask yourself, I know I'm asking myself the same thing, I went grocery shopping yesterday, is how much more am I paying for dinner tonight? It's inflation. It's rising gas prices again, as OPEC has announced they're going to cut production. And those real pocketbook issues that are on the ballot, and so is abortion. 4 weeks out, abortion is back in the spotlight, especially with the recent allegations against football star Herschel Walker, who is the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in Georgia.
Senator Warnock and Walker are set to debate this Friday. It's expected to be their only debate, and you can imagine the issue of abortion rights, at the very least, will be front and center.
The latest polling showing the race neck and neck as Walker and his Democratic opponent, Senator Raphael Warnock, make their final case to Georgia voters.
Of course, the abortion issue is one thing that, you know, certainly is on the ballot, if you will, as we look at issues coming into the midterm elections, and so is this.
Election denials have also been taking center stage this election. 538 found that 60% of Americans will have a candidate who denies the election on the ballot. We know this is especially critical in those gubernatorial and secretary of state races, which will have a major influence on how elections are carried out in the future.
Thanks, ABC News, for that audio. Let's try to put all of this in perspective with a regular contributor, a trusted voice here on Relevant Radio, Dr. Paul Kangor, who is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, also the executive director for the Center of Vision and Values. And his latest book is The Devil and Karl Marx. Dr. Kangor, welcome back.
Yeah, hey, John, good to be back again.
You know, you hear all of these predictions, and I'm done with predictions when we look at the last several elections that, absolutely missed what the popular vote and what the voters wanted. So as you look at what's happening, especially in Georgia, because there's been so much attention given to Georgia, I don't want to get into the specific issues with Herschel Walker, but if Georgia goes red, if Georgia stays red, what impact does that have on the Republicans overall in the elections, in the midterm elections? And if Georgia goes blue, what does that have in terms of the implications of the overall results of the midterms?
Yeah, well, it's such an interesting state, John. It's really an anomaly compared to the entire South, right? I mean, pretty much all of the southern states from Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, the Carolinas, I mean, they're all solidly Republican. And Georgia is the one exception. And Georgia was the one exception in the 2020 election as well. It came down to recounts and just a few thousand votes. And to this day, Stacey Abrams and the Democrats are doing down there what Democrats say you're not allowed to do, which is argue that an election wasn't valid, right? Questioning whether or not the vote in 2020 there was legitimate, whether or not there was fraud involved. But this race between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker is really really fascinating. Turning into kind of a soap opera. These allegations against Herschel Walker and the allegation, right, is that he paid for an abortion for a woman that he wasn't married to, and they claim that there's a $700 check. It doesn't have his name signed on it. but the woman claims that that was to pay for an abortion. New York Times ran with a story, which New York Times would be expected to do with a Republican. I'm sure they wouldn't do this if it was with Warnock. And sorry to make such a partisan comment, but it's true. That's how
it's a statement of fact, because this is the reality in which we live.
Yeah, it's really true. It's why I quit reading the New York Times a long time ago. You know, they don't do these kinds of stories for people on their side. That is the left Democratic side. But that aside, it's if what's true is about Herschel Walker, if what's alleged is true, it's very troubling. And let me say for the record, he's denied it. He has said that it's not true, that it didn't happen. And I don't know. Yeah, we're in one of these tough situations where we don't know for sure if it's true or not. I should add here, too, for people that are a little confused by this around the country and thinking, oh, well, this is going to kill Herschel Walker. This is a big character issue for him. Well, Raphael Warnock's got a lot of these character flaws, too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this could end up, you know, being kind of a wash in Georgia, although there's no question that Walker, being a conservative and with pro-lifers down there wanting to vote for him, this would hurt him among pro-lifers. Although then again, Warnock is so bad on the abortion issue that you'd probably have a lot of pro-lifers who, as they did with Donald Trump in 2016, right? Say, well, I don't know, Trump claims that he's pro-life, but, you know, the guy was pro-choice. I can't imagine he could possibly be a pro-life president. But then again, my choice between him and Hillary Clinton, all right, I'll take my chances. I'll vote for Trump. And it paid off. You know, Trump appointed three Supreme Court justices who reversed Roe v. Wade. So you know, the gamble there would be you're better off voting for Walker than Warnock, even if perhaps Walker might have done something like this. And the two are going to debate, like you said. I think it's the only debate, right, that they're going
to
have.
That's the only one. It's the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a dynamic, too. All around the country, John, a lot of these Senate races, they're debating one time. And that's it. I mean, oftentimes you'll have two, three debates. Here in Pennsylvania, we just want one debate between John Fetterman, you know, our kind of odd 6'8", 300-pound guy that wears a hoodie and has a bunch of tattoos, and a guy named Dr. Oz, who's the Republican nominee. And Fetterman won't debate because, in his defense, let me just say adamantly, emphatically, in his defense, he had a stroke. So you know, he's cognitively impaired, and we're all sympathetic to that. But these two really do need a debate. And we don't know if it's ever going to happen. And that's been kind of the situation all around the country. So you get some really weird Senate races this year. And how crucial are they? Well, the Senate's just about 50-50. So yeah, however this goes, it's going to decide whether the Republicans or the Democrats control the Senate.
Dr. Paul Kengor with us. We're handicapping the midterm elections. We go into the voting booth on Tuesday, November 8th. That is 4 weeks from tomorrow. 888-914-9149 to join in our conversation and ask Dr. Kengor some questions about the midterms and perhaps what's happening in your state. 888-914-9149. A bigger picture question, Dr. Kengor. Dr. Oz, Herschel Walker in Arizona, decidedly pro-life candidate, and she's very eloquent about issues of life, is Carrie Lake, who's running for governor, and she's a former very successful television news anchor in Phoenix. What is your view of celebrity candidates in their experience and what they can and cannot bring to the table should they be elected?
Yeah, and Donald Trump really broke the mold on this, right? I mean, he was, you'd have to consider him a celebrity candidate. He was a household name. Yeah, he was on TV for years, and long before that, everyone knew him as just, you know, Donald Trump, probably America's most famous billionaire. And he never ever was elected office until 2016. Yeah, that's the first time that he won. And Trump has an affinity for endorsing candidates who are sort of celebrity candidates. In fact, here in Pennsylvania, it was really between Dr. Oz and we had a candidate named McCormick. In our state, David McCormick, And it was going to be, a lot of people were leaning to McCormick. They thought he was more qualified. He had the better background, the better resume. But Trump, like a lot of other people, thought, well, in Pennsylvania, somebody like Oz, who's known on television and liked for being on television, might do a better job because of that sort of celebrity background. Next door to me in Ohio, J.D. Vance is the same kind of situation. Not quite a celebrity, but he was already known from his books and his writings before he came in. And maybe the one of the best examples of all, the person I'm really an expert on, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan won the governorship of California twice. Everyone knew him in America. The guy had been on the cover of TV Guide. In the 1950s, he had the number one show on television, GE Theater, for several years. Kind of he and Fulton Sheen, right? He had dominated television. And then Reagan in 1980 won 44 out of 50 states, in part because a lot of people already felt they knew him. No matter how brutally he was attacked by people on the left, a lot of Americans said, wait a second, this is Ronald Reagan, the host of GE Theater. The guy that I watched on TV all these years. See, I know him. He's a good guy. So these celebrity backgrounds can help, but I think it really is true. We don't want to underestimate Americans. They still, in the end, they want someone who's articulate, who's right on the issues. Someone like Dr. Oz, his big criticism here in Pennsylvania, John, is that he's a carpetbagger, right? People mm-hmm. say, well, he's not really from the state of Pennsylvania. But he's very articulate, and he's a nice guy. He's a good guy. I know people who know him. I've had students talk to him. And when he was just one among several people in the race here in Pennsylvania, I had students come up to me and say, I was really against the guy, but I met him. I can't believe how nice the guy is. So if you have all those other things going for you, too, on top of the celebrity, then you have somebody who's a pretty potent candidate, and which is why Herschel Walker, despite these latest allegations, is still neck and neck with Raphael Warnock in Georgia.
Taking a look at the midterms, it's a month away. Dr. Paul Kangor, a regular contributor here on Relevant Radio and a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania and the executive director of the Center for Vision and Values. 888-914-9149 to be a part of the conversation. One of the most closely looked at races, Dr. Kangor, and it is a statistical dead heat right now, going by the 538 numbers, is in Wisconsin, the gubernatorial race in Wisconsin. Jonathan is north of Milwaukee, listening to us on Relevant Radio 100.1. Jonathan, good afternoon. You're on with Dr. Kangor.
Yes, politics is a very interesting. I heard a speech by Cardinal Dolan about 15 years ago, and he said that without Fulton Sheen on television in the 50s, we would not have had President John F. Kennedy, because people that had never met a Catholic watched Fulton Sheen and they thought, oh, those Catholics, they're pretty nice guys. But my question is, what do you see in Wisconsin? It's just, I wouldn't want to bet more than $5 on either the Senate race or the governor's race. It's gotten to be just a mud-flinging festival, almost.
How do you get above all of the mud? I know that's impossible because we've had mud being flung for I don't know how many decades now. But yeah, when it's that razor thin, and you've got deep pockets on both sides bombarding the airwaves with different types of messages, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff here, Dr. Kangor?
Well, it's not easy, and I would say in Wisconsin, if I was a betting man, I would bet on Ron Johnson, the Republican, to hold that seat. But it's close. And what he said there, John, about Cardinal Dolan, I've never heard that before. I'm quite intrigued by that.
Neither have I.
Cardinal Dolan, yeah, and Cardinal Dolan is indeed a historian. He's a historian by training, in addition to being a priest by training. He has a PhD in history. I remember he interviewed me for my book, A Pope and a President, and I was absolutely blown away about how much he knew, not about John Paul II, but about Ronald Reagan. I mean, he knew absolutely everything about the guy. And so really, really knowledgeable. And if he said that if Americans, Fulton Sheen kind of softened Americans up to the idea of a Catholic president, that's really interesting. And I think that one could make a case that Sheen did that. And have you ever seen, John, there, you could find this on YouTube. People should Google it. There's the TV show from the 50s. I think it was What's My Line? Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. The person would come out while the panelists were blindfolded, and right. It'd be somebody that you knew, and then they would write their name on the chalkboard so the right. audience could see. And then
Fulton Sheen was on that once.
Yes, yes. Watch the one with Fulton Sheen. He walks out. He writes JMJ on the chalkboard, and the place erupts. People. It sounds like people are leaping up and down in yeah. their seats. And then he writes Fulton Sheen, and the panelists even say, "Wow, I've never heard an ovation like that before."
That's
and,
right.
Sheen was absolutely beloved. Protestants would watch that show, and I mentioned Reagan and GE Theater in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Sheen knocked off who was the guy? Milton Berle, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he won an Emmy, he got up there and he said, "I'd like to thank my four writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John."
I know.
Right?
Classic.
That kind of winsome personality, he did indeed make people think, I guess the Catholics aren't that bad after all, right? This guy's a pretty nice guy. So that might indeed have helped pave the way for Kennedy, the president, ironically, of the Cuban Missile Crisis 60 years ago.
That's right.
This month, we're hoping there's not a repeat of that.
Yeah.
Right now, this month, but very interesting point by him. I really like that call.
Jonathan, thanks for listening to Relevant Radio with Dr. Paul Kangor. Looking ahead to the midterm elections, Ron in St. Paul, Minnesota, on Relevant Radio 1330. Hi, Ron. Welcome.
Hi.
You're on with Dr. Kangor.
I'm here. Yes.
Yes. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
My question: you've made quite a thing about Dr. Oz being such a nice guy. Do you think President Trump is a nice guy?
Well, I don't know what that has to do with whether or not Oz is a nice guy, Dr. Oz is indeed a nice guy. I know people who met him. By the way, maybe this might give me some credibility with you. Although I'm a Republican in Pennsylvania, I did not vote for Oz in the Republican primary, I'll just say that Oz is a nice guy. so there you go.
I know someone who worked on this television show for years and years and years and years, and he really is a nice guy, and looked at the staff as family and really treated them well, Dr. Oz as an employer.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is why, for the caller, okay, one of the reasons that people that are in Oz's camp pushed him to run in Pennsylvania is because he's a nice guy, because he's likable. And as I've said actually on this show probably about 1,000 times, including when I talked with Drew about a week or two ago, or maybe it was with you, John, Donald Trump is not liked. And as I said to a caller who wasn't happy with me a couple of weeks ago, who said that the country needs to nominate Donald Trump again, I said, don't do that, because Donald Trump is not just disliked by over 50% of the population. He is loathed. He is hated. Mm-hmm. He is detested by over 50% of the public, which is why I said you need to run somebody who's likable. And someone like DeSantis is likable. 2016, Hillary was not liked. Trump was not liked. I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. I didn't like him. So likability versus not being liked is very, very important. And, that caller might perhaps be a Democrat and doesn't want Oz to win. But I could tell you, Oz is a nice guy and he's liked.
Wherever you fall on the spectrum about Donald Trump, he left a lasting mark on democracy in general by questioning the validity of elections. And now voters from both parties are saying there could be election fraud if their candidate loses here. And the Democrats say it, Republicans say it as well. And it's been brought up in a number of individual states. To give it some perspective, because Arizona was really kind of a linchpin on this, some 3.2 million votes. And this comes after audit after audit, hand recounts. How many times did the vote get recounted in Arizona? And there were 3.2 million ballots in the 2020 election. They found 450 questionable ballots out of 3.2 million. Certainly not enough to change the outcome of any election. So how do you put the toothpaste back in the tube with that? Because that is the permanent brand that history books will look at Donald Trump as leaving on this part of our history of the United States.
Well, it's fascinating. It was not until 2020 that the liberals insisted that you can't talk about election fraud or have suspicions about an election anymore. Let's go back to 1960. I just mentioned JFK. JFK, Nixon, and there's a book on that now that just came out. I mean Richard Nixon very well quite possibly won that election. And by the way, I'm a Republican who's a big JFK fan. I think JFK was a very good president for a number of different reasons. But there was mass fraud in 1960 in Texas, West Virginia, Chicago. Fast forward 40 years to 2000. I mean, The Democrats and liberals were screaming that George Bush had stolen that election. I mean, there were books like Bush Whacked by the Supremes.
That was one
of them. You know, Al Gore challenged that election. From 2016 to 2020, all I heard again and again on things like MSNBC was Trump colluded with the Russians and Putin to steal the election from Hillary, right, for 4 years. You know, there was the whole Russian collusion investigation. And then all of a sudden, 2020, and, you know, you have some Trump supporters who wonder if there was fraud. It maybe in places like my state in Pennsylvania, and you could be canceled for that. You know, you're never supposed to question the integrity of our democracy, right?
So
this stuff has gone on forever. Yeah, and the other side of my I'm about an hour from Pittsburgh. Philadelphia, right, where the country was founded, has been horrendous for voter fraud forever. It's probably worse than Chicago. You know, this kind of thing has gone on forever, which is why states like Georgia, after the 2020 vote, were pushing election integrity laws, which people like Stacey Abrams called racist. And our Democratic president, Joe Biden, compared to Jim Crow laws. But it's important to have election integrity so people don't have those kinds of questions and so they can have genuine faith in democracy and their vote. If they don't, that's a bad thing for the country.
You've heard us say this so many times before in our conversations with Dr. Kangor. We've got 4 weeks to go. It's an eternity in politics. Who knows what this conversation will be like even next week. Dr. Kangor, as always, thanks for your perspective.
All right, John. Anytime. God bless.
Dr. Paul Kangor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania and the executive director of the Center for Vision and Values here on The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Faith over fear.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon, who's on pilgrimage with Relevant Radio listeners in the Holy Land. You know, you and I in 6 weeks are going to be saying Happy New Year to each other because we'll start the brand new church year with the beginning of Advent. So it's coming up really, really fast. And of course, the Christmas season, and you can make the Christmas season visually and spiritually beautiful for you, your family, and everybody who goes by your house, because we are giving away 200 nativity sets made possible by a very generous donor to Relevant Radio. These are gorgeous. They're hand-painted. Put it in your window, on your porch, in your front yard, and it's a way to really display the humble and profound reason for the season. But time's a-wasting because you only have to the end of the week to enter to win one of these 200 nativity sets. Our deadline is Midnight Central on October 16th. Midnight Central, October 16th. To sign up, you can do that very easily at relevantradio.com/set, S-E-T. That's easy. RelevantRadio.com/set for your chance to win this beautiful nativity set from Relevant Radio. Well, you know, we talk about the unintended consequences of so many things. And as you and I have been talking, and as Drew's been talking, and Patrick Madrid, and all of our programs here on Relevant Radio post Roe versus Wade, of the consequences of Roe versus Wade being overturned. First of all, thanks be to God for that. It is the answer to the prayers and the hundreds of millions of memoraries that you've been praying in our memorari campaign, which has not finished, because now the abortion issue goes to our states. And you're hearing all of the ramifications of that already, just a few months after Roe versus Wade. So now we're taking a look at what is happening here, and it's like peeling the layers of an onion, right? There's always something underneath. And now there is a birth control fight that has reached our college campuses, and it's the fallout from the demise of Roe versus Wade. And this is something that's forcing college administrators, admittedly in secular colleges, to weigh how reproductive health services, there's that flowery term again, on college campuses may actually conflict with state abortion laws. Earlier today, we were talking about the state abortion laws and how judges are tackling them now in places like Ohio, in Arizona, and in Idaho. And it could be, as college administrators look at the laws in their individual states and how they look at birth control and reproductive health services. And so you have a real clash that is happening here. So it is causing some colleges to consider cutting back, and something that colleges are concerned about because, they do not in great numbers share our views as life from the moment of conception until natural death. Let's examine this through the eyes of Lewis Brown. He's the executive director of the Christ Medicus Foundation, also on the board of the Catholic Health Alliance, online at CatholicHealthAlliance.org, CatholicHealthAlliance.org. Lewis, welcome to Relevant Radio. It's good to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got these state bans. I was mentioning Idaho and, of course, in Ohio, and also happening in the state of Florida, where this has now gone before judges for a number of other reasons. But now the ramifications also in the Commonwealth of Kentucky will indeed affect what is happening on college campuses. And this is something that has been on the radar of the American College Health Association. And we've got abortion rights advocates saying that state bans are designed to prevent people from not only getting an abortion, but from accessing reproductive health services. Bottom liners, we're talking about birth control here. The language of these laws, as you know, varies in matters when life begins, and thus the legal ambiguities here. How do you view this and what colleges are doing right now to have second thoughts about being in the contraception business?
Right. Again, thanks for having me on. I think that the pro-abortion industry, in articulating that these state restrictions on abortion, these pro-life laws restricting abortion, when they say that it's about contraception, they're lying. It's not true. The effort to prohibit, put restrictions on legal abortion in the states where they've passed, the effort to prohibit and restrict abortion, to pass pro-life laws at the state level, have always been about protecting the sanctity of life for the unborn child and protecting the dignity of his or her pregnant mother. That's all that it's been about. So there's an attempt by the pro-abortion industry to conflate contraception with abortion. That's never been the intention or the legal reality behind these laws, and it's a lie. It's just not true, and we shouldn't allow them to get away with it. We need to call them out on the deception.
You know, earlier today we were having a conversation about this very thing with Dr. Larry Chapp, who's a retired professor of theology. It was with Teresa Collette, who's a professor who teaches at the University of St. Thomas School of Law. And we were talking about these issues of life and how, as Catholics, we almost speak in a shorthand because we know Roe versus Wade and the impact it's had on our society since 1973. And yes, we thank God that it's been overturned by the Supreme Court, but we're still very much in the wild, wild west because because there really aren't any cases here. I mean, these are in many cases, especially in the state of Idaho, and I know it's something that is front and center with the administration of the University of Idaho. There's a 1972 anti-abortion law on the books, but it's never been tested. So none of this has been tested before.
Right. Yeah. And I think a couple things are important. It's very important to recognize that, you know, what abortion is, that it's not health care. It's the intentional killing of the unborn child. It does violence not only to the unborn child, but also the pregnant mother. It's just not health care. And because it's not health care and it does violence to the pregnant mothers and unborn children, it has no business being available. Abortion has no business being available, and public universities have no business providing abortion services, abortion procedures at public universities or private universities for that matter.
Yeah.
Any college or university that is in the business of facilitating abortion on college campuses are undermining and really violating the duty that they have to care for the students that pay tuition on their college campuses. So that's just really clear. The other thing is that's important, again, is that the restrictions that states have placed on abortion, the pro-life laws passed at the state level to protect unborn children and protect pregnant mothers, have always been about abortion. It's not been about the contraception issue. That's been a separate legal and political and cultural fight. There's connections culturally and philosophically, spiritually, sure, there's connections. But in terms of what the law says, generally, I haven't done a review of all the state laws on the books restricting abortion, but state legislatures that have passed pro-life laws currently or in the past have been seeking to prevent and prohibit abortion. Their object of restriction have not been contraception. And so that leads to a larger point that I think is very important. The rule of law really matters. It's vital that attorney generals, it's vital that state legislatures, it's even more important that state judges apply the law as it is given to them from the state legislature and as the governor has signed it for that state. Sadly and tragically, since Roe was overturned, justly overturned, and the Dobbs decision was issued, we have seen some state court judges and some attorney generals engaging in lawlessness, creating legal fictions that don't exist and not applying the rule of law. That undermines human dignity. It undermines the protection of all of our human and civil rights, and it undermines the very basic order of society. If we continue to see state court judges and attorney generals that are pro-abortion fail to perform their duty to execute the law as the state legislature has passed and as the governor has signed it, we're going to see a breakdown in society. We're going to see a collapse in society. We can't proceed this way. And it's very dangerous. Our country has only ever been about human dignity that's protected within the Constitution, that we all agree to this constitutional document, and that the several states will uphold a rule of law as those state legislatures have created them over the centuries. And so if we fail to do that, if we fail to uphold the Constitution, if we fail to apply the just rule of law as these state legislatures have passed and as they have restricted abortion, we will see the collapse of human dignity. We will see an erosion of the rule of law, and the fabric of society will break down. This cannot stand. This has been particularly egregious in Michigan, where I'm from. I'm a lawyer. I went to a Michigan State undergrad and Howard University School of Law and practiced law for a time in Michigan. And it is egregious what has happened there. And it needs to stop. We need to see judges and attorney generals applying the rule of law.
Well, as you talk about that, and our guest here is Lewis Brown, who's the executive director of the Christ Medicus Foundation, and we're talking about post-Dobbs, how this birth control fight is happening on college campuses in Michigan. It's what, 1931? We're talking about 90 years old.
Right.
It's a pre-Roe abortion ban that has been struck down. And here's the president of the University of Michigan saying, and I'm quoting here, Mr. Brown, I will do everything in my power as president to ensure we continue to provide this critically important care. What they're talking about is contraception and so-called health care services that we very often hear the pro-abortion people talk about. So this is the mentality that's there.
Right. And so, again, it's vitally important that we call out the lie that the state pro-life laws restricting abortion are about restricting abortion. These are not about contraceptive fight. Obviously, where abortifacients can cause abortions, that's a different where you're dealing with abortifacients. That's a different story, right? Those can in certain circumstances cause abortions, but generally we're talking about pro-life state laws that are restricting abortion, not contraception. So I believe there's a political effort to conflate the two and to create confusion and deception and ambiguity that doesn't really exist. That's number one. Number two, state and private colleges should be in the business of caring for and forming and educating. They're there to educate their students. They're not there to facilitate, to empower the killing of unborn children or the harm and the violence that's done to a pregnant mother when an abortion is conducted. So, I think it's important to talk about what care really is. Abortion never has been, never will be health care. It never has been, never will be a constitutional right. Never has been, never will be a human or a civil right. If anything, the beauty of the Dobbs decision, and I speak as an African-American who went to a historically black law school, where that was the birthplace of the American legal civil rights movement. The Dobbs decision was beautiful in that it gave us a chance as a country to have a new birth of civil rights, to properly articulate that civil rights ultimately are based on the protection of the sanctity of life, the protection of human dignity. Dobbs didn't go all that way, but it pointed towards the need for ordered liberty. Everything is not a right. Our rights are those things that allow our humanity to flourish, that allow our human dignity to persevere and to persist. And so that's why I'm excited about Dobbs. It gives us a new chance to really protect human dignity and have a new birth of civil rights in our country.
And that's a very important point to advance, because we always talk about, Lewis, here on Relevant Radio, is as Roman Catholic men and women, how this conversation about life, yes, is going on in our state capitals now, but it's also going on at our kitchen tables and in our family rooms, right? Because that's how the issue of life and the point that you so eloquently made changes hearts and changes minds. So that's the empowerment that we have right now as Catholic men and women with our families as well. As we look at what's happening on these college campuses and also those who are advocates for abortion, taking a look specifically at what's happening at the University of Idaho and to an extent what's happening on the campus of the University of Michigan, when do you expect the lawsuits to come along if, as in the case of the University of Idaho, the president said, no more. We can do health care, but no more contraception. No more talk about contraceptives in our clinics. So he's essentially shutting it down to be right in compliance with the 1972 law in Idaho. When do the lawsuits start?
Yeah, you would hope that a person that believes in the sanctity and the dignity of life, you would hope that, that a decision that is going in the direction of compliance, with Idaho law, that's going towards protecting life and that's going towards protecting women, would not be contested legally. I can't speak to the legal dynamics specifically in Idaho because I haven't done a heavy legal review.
Sure.
But I do think we're going to see a lot of litigation. I think what we're in right now is somewhat analogous to what happened after Brown v. Board of Education. Some of the country, I wasn't around, but as a student of Brown v. Board and everything that happened, I wasn't physically alive yet. But
as a student of what happened, as a student of the legal and the political fight that happened after Brown, you know, you had a lot of folks that were very happy about desegregation, but you also had a lot of folks in the North and the South that were very unhappy about Brown v. Board, and sought to resist what was a just legal decision. And we're seeing the same thing with Dobbs. We're seeing different parts of the country that are celebrating, but we're also seeing different parts of the country that are legally and politically resisting, including disregarding the rule of law putting the place of political power over the rule of law, and creating legal fictions and really engaging in deception, I would argue, to undermine what the Supreme Court correctly and justly did in the Dobbs decision. So all of this is going to take time to play out. For Brown v. Board, it took a couple decades before the court had to say again and again, this is what Brown said. The Supreme Court is going to have to say again and again, this is what Dobbs said. I hope over time at the state level and at the federal level, we'll see courts, we'll see legislatures recognize even more so legally and politically the reality of the value of unborn life.
Let me just jump in right here, because we'll continue our conversation with Lewis Brown in just a couple of seconds as we look at this post-Dobbs birth control fight heading to college campuses and maybe your kids' campuses as we continue here on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon, talking about perhaps some of the unintended consequences, or maybe you anticipated post-Dobbs how the birth control fight would eventually wind up on college campuses, and it is all across the country, with college administrators weighing in how reproductive health services are offered on their campuses and how they may conflict with state abortion laws. There's a 1972 law on the books in the state of Iowa. It's the anti-abortion law. It's the pro-life law, and that would make the University of Idaho stop providing access to nearly all types of birth controls. And I'll quote a spokesperson from the University of Idaho. It's Jody Walker, quote, "While abortion can be discussed as a policy issue in the classroom, we recommend employees in charge of the classroom remain neutral or risk violating this law." We're unpacking this with an attorney, Lewis Brown, the executive director of the Christ Medicus Foundation. So now we've got First Amendment rights perhaps entering into the conversation, don't we, Mr. Brown?
I would say that, you know, folks are talking about that, but I don't think that's really at issue. I think as, you know, as universities and colleges and other folks, so, that are
somebody will push that button. Someone will push that button, as the woman did in Florida. And this is going through the courts right now in Florida, where on behalf of, she and two other women are Jewish, and saying, wait a minute, you're forcing Christian Catholic values on not only me, but those of you who are not Catholic. And that's right. making its way through the courts.
Right. I think folks are saying a lot of different things, but I think it's important to recognize that state restrictions, state pro-life laws restricting abortion are about restricting abortion and protecting unborn children and their pregnant mothers. It is not at all restricting First Amendment rights in any form or fashion whatsoever. That's a deception that will be articulated. I would also say that I do a lot of work on religious freedom. The exercise of religious freedom, the exercise of medical conscience in healthcare, the exercise of those freedoms, the exercise of those civil rights of conscience and religious freedom must inherently be just, must inherently be consistent with the sanctity of life and human dignity. So therefore, there's no religious freedom right to an abortion, just like there's no religious freedom right to murder. There's no conscience right to commit murder. There's no conscience right to commit an abortion. So it's important that that we, as the pro-life community, the pro-life nation, the people of God, as a Catholic community in the United States, boldly and courageously, we got to tell the truth. And when folks are lying or mistaken or seeking to deceive others, we have to call it out. We got to do it now. The other thing that we have to do, and I think this is very important, as we continue to encourage and collaborate with state policymakers that are justly restricting abortion, that are justly passing pro-life laws, as we seek to protect medical conscience and religious freedom rights, that's a big issue. In pro-abortion states, we need to defend medical conscience and religious freedom rights for pro-life medical professionals and pro-life healthcare entities. We got to do that. That's a big deal in places like New York and Colorado and Maryland. We got to protect conscience. We got to protect religious freedom. But the third thing we got to do, what we need to do, is we need to support and expand the availability of actual care, i.e. pro-life medical care. So if we have pregnancy centers, particularly located near college campuses, what more can they do? How can we help them to do more? Where we have pro-life medical centers, how can we support their expansion? How can we help them do more? Where there's a gap, where we have a college or university where there's young women and they're perhaps being deceived by the horrible, horrid, just horrendous things going on in an abortion clinic they're being lied to. What alternative can we provide? Can we build a new pro-life medical center there? Can we build a new pregnancy clinic there? That's some of what we help our partners to do at Christ Medicus. That's vitally important. We need to do that now. We have to expand the care. We can't just, it's necessary that we restrict abortion at the state level, at the federal level, but it's not sufficient. We have to provide even more care. We've been doing amazing, right? There's more pregnancy clinics in our nation than there are abortion clinics, praise the Lord. But we need to even do more. We need to maximize particularly what we're doing for women right now.
Lewis Brown is the executive director of the Christ Medicus Foundation here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And patience certainly is not one of my virtues, Mr. Brown. And I think like a lot of our Relevant Radio family, we want all of this to go away and just respect life from the moment of conception until natural death. But as you point out, and it's a valid comparison with Brown versus Board of Education and the issues of desegregating schools took some two decades. And I lived through that and watched it firsthand and covered it as a reporter in Boston. It was not pretty in 1975 and 1976. In fact, it was violence. But that is a very long preamble. Thanks be to God that we're starting to see, I think, a demographic shift here in the United States. At least I pray for this when we see the numbers of young people who are standing up for life. When we see pro-life organizations happening in high schools and colleges, just take a look at the demographics of any March for Life. And that is certainly evidence that future generations of Catholic Christians are changing their outlook on what life is from the moment of conception until natural death. And that's something that we have to focus on. But also, again, going back to the point of having that conversation in our kitchens, as moms and dads, it's also our responsibility as Catholic parents to dissuade our kids from attending colleges that have the guidance like the University of Michigan.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I'm blessed to be, I'll leave the college out for the, because it's so controversial, but I'm blessed to be on very connected to, one of our amazing Catholic universities. And I do think it is vital, as parents, and I have numerous godchildren, no children yet, but hopefully soon. But it's vital that we place our young Catholic people in places where they can be successful. And chiefly successful in the perseverance in the faith, which is the priority. It's the only thing that really matters, right? And so if we put our young people in a place where they're going to be isolated and cut off from their faith, that's not good. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a Catholic school. You look at Texas A&M, where they have a remarkable community for Catholics, even at that public university. So I think that's very important. And I think too, as we think about these issues, it's important that we recognize that this is a moral issue, that I know that for me and for many others, a friend of mine, who's a wonderful Catholic priest, said this on a social media post. He's a Catholic priest in the Detroit Archdiocese. And this is true for me as well. What changed me on abortion, I was never pro-choice, but it was one of many issues. I was pro-life, but it was one of many issues for me. It wasn't the issue, the the preeminent issue, as the bishops say, of our time, until a friend of mine told me about the silent scream, until I realized that abortion from a biological scientific perspective, from the biological scientific reality of what abortion is, that it's a commission of a murder of a child. Mm-hmm. When I recognized that, it changed everything. It wasn't church teaching. It was the biological scientific reality of life and the biological scientific reality that abortion is the intentional killing of unborn life. When I realized that, it transformed how I approached the issue. And so it's important, and I had the gift of participating in an academic symposium a couple weeks ago. I met Colette there, Professor Colette as well. And it's important that folks talked about the importance of taking the moral high ground.
Right.
We have to take the moral high ground. And it's the reality that abortion is murder. It's the reality that to protect life is just. It is the only pathway to protecting human dignity. And that when we protect unborn life, when we protect life at conception, when we protect the unborn child, we're also giving birth. We're also protecting a society's human and civil rights across the board. That's part of the reason why you're seeing so many African Americans, so many young Latino Americans come to the reality that I have to be pro-life because I believe in justice, because I believe in human dignity, because I believe in
Amen.
Life. Even see the words.
I have to jump in only because we're out of time, but we're blessed with your eloquence and the witness of your faith. Lewis Brown, Executive Director of the Christ Medicus Foundation. Let's continue the conversation with you because you're an important voice that we need to amplify here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.